Welcome to Equiosity, the podcast about all things equine, with a special emphasis on the horse-human bond. My name is Alexandra Kurland. I'm the author of Modern Horse Training and many other books and DVDs about clicker training. And I'm joined by Dominique Day, one of the co-founders of Cavalia. Toward the end of March, Dominique and I met for an afternoon's conversation, which I have now divided up into three episodes. In part one, we talked about puzzle solving, and this led to a great real-life experience using backchaining that Dominique shared with us. I suspect her description of how she learned her lines for a play that her local theater group put on may have helped a great many of you understand the difference between forward chaining and back chaining. Last week, the spotlight was on rope handling, so we added another teaching strategy. We added reversibility into the mix, and I shared some body awareness explorations that helped develop our observational skills and also help you to learn new handling skills as you develop your rope handling. This week, we are changing topics yet again. Dominique wants to talk about agility, and that's a great topic, one that we really haven't covered in any detail before. But before I jump into the conversation, I want to provide an overview for this discussion. For me, clicker training has three phases. These phases don't have clear, distinct lines separating one from the other. You aren't in phase one, and then you come to a clear demarcation line, and now you're in phase two. Instead, they merge one into the other. So what are these three phases? The first phase introduces the horse and the handler to clicker training. And I use the six foundation lessons for this. These lessons are, as you know, if you're a regular listener to these podcasts, these lessons are targeting, head lowering, backing, the grown-ups are talking, please don't interrupt, happy faces, and stationing on a mat. And the goal in this first phase is not to perfect these lessons. These are behaviors that you will continue to develop over time. They're going to become more complex. They're going to take on many more functions as your training expands. No, in phase one, you are simply introducing your horse to the basic form of these lessons, and you're using them to help explain clicker training, the basics of clicker training, both to your horse and, if you're new to clicker training, to explain it to yourself. So these lessons introduce the horse to the use of a marker signal. They show the handler how to introduce the use of food so that it transforms from being a distraction into a useful training tool. The horse and handler are introduced to concepts such as loopy training, to cues, to chaining, and many other important concepts, principles, and teaching strategies that you will use throughout your training. So if you did nothing else with clicker training other than take your horse through these six basic foundation lessons, you will have gone a long way towards establishing safe ground manners. You know, you think about it. If you have a horse who backs up easily on cue, lower his head, who knows how to stand politely beside you, this is a horse that is going to become increasingly easy to get along with. Which brings us to phase two of clicker training. In phase two, you're going to use the foundation lessons to help teach the universals. We've talked about this in many of the podcasts. The universals are those activities which horses need to understand and to be comfortable with, regardless of the performance goals a handler may have. It doesn't matter if you ride English or Western or you don't ride at all, we all need to take care of our horse's feet. So foot care is an obvious universal. And it's easy to think of other universals, activities we want our horses to be comfortable with, such as grooming, haltering, and other husbandry activities. The foundation lessons make it so much easier to teach these skills. A horse that understands targets can easily learn to put his nose into a halter. A horse who understands targeting and body part targeting will bring his eye to a handler's hand for cooperative medical care. He can stand on a mat or by a stationary target for grooming, for tacking up, for baths. The list goes on and on. And for me, the universals also include the basic beginnings of riding. Before you start looking at specific sports and the skills needed for those, riding needs to be safe. And so that, I would say, sits within the umbrella of teaching the universals. Phase two then clearly merges into phase three. Phase three begins to look at specific performance goals. What do you want to do with your horse? For some people, the answer is what they want is a great relationship. They're not interested in riding. They just love being around their horse and taking care of him. That's what they want. So using clicker training for enrichment and to create a cooperative care is the main goal of training. And that means that often basic ordinary grooming becomes elevated to the level of performance. Medical care isn't just something that the horse tolerates. He becomes a cooperative, consenting partner in whatever needs to be done. The goal is deep friendship. The training transforms everyday tasks into Grand Prix level performance. But that's not all that we're talking about in when we look at the three phases of clicker training, and we are looking specifically at phase three. Phase three, we're really talking about the skills needed for specific performance-related goals. One person may be interested in jumping, another dressage, a third person may like reining, and a fourth person may want to ride out. Or maybe the same person wants to do all of those. Who knows? But all of these riders need to know the basics of riding walk, trot, canter. And there may be overlapping skills as you begin to explore a specific sport. But if you are interested in jumping, for example, you may need to go, want to go to someone who specializes in this sport to help you to set up the gymnastic grids and other patterns that can help a horse to jump well. And that's true for all the different sports. If you're interested in reining, you need to look at how you teach reining spins and sliding stops, things of that sort. And for all of these sports, you also need to consider just how far you're willing to go within the requirements of a sport. You know, how high are you going to jump? How fast are you going to push a horse into a sliding stop? Because as a clicker trainer, your training very much is looking out for the welfare of your horse. Which, of course, brings us to my interest, which is in balance. So if someone is starting into my work, if looking at clicker training through the resources that I have developed, and if you happen to have an interest in classical dressage, I think you're going to find that my interest in yours and the goals that you have are very much aligned. But that doesn't mean that you have to be interested in classical dressage in order to work with me. Those first two phases are universals. Regardless of what your ultimate goals are, we need to introduce you and your horse to clicker training, and then you need to gain more familiarity with how you teach behavior, and that's what we use the universals for. So as you learn how to teach using these universals that really all horses need to be familiar with, that prepares you well for whatever your specific performance goals are. My role is not to direct you down a particular path. It's not to try and push everybody into an interest in classical dressage. My role is to support you as you explore a wide range of activities. And some of these activities may require specialized knowledge, and we'll need to go find a coach that can really help you out in this area. But you may also discover that what you've been learning as you've been developing your clicker training skills has already given you many of the teaching skills that you need to succeed in the sport that you're interested in. And that's what this week's conversation is really about. Dominique wants to talk about agility. So let's see how that fits into this overall view of the three phases of clicker training and the constructional training approach that we've been talking about in these podcasts.
So if you want to change gears a little bit. I want to talk about agility.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because some of the participants in the coaching session have expressed interest in agility. And so we kind of started a little conversation around agility, and I hope that together we can create, you know, and develop something interesting around that topic once in a while during the sessions. And as you know, I've been myself playing with it a little bit on and off in my own little corner of the world, just for fun. But because the participant expressed some interest, you know, I've been looking a little bit more into it. And there was a question I asked during one of the coaching sessions, and we didn't spend a lot of time on the question because we had so many other videos to look at. But I want to talk about it a little bit more here because we have the time and give you more context or information about the question I had asked. I think it was two coaching sessions ago. And it was about independent work. You know, the animals being independent while they're doing some parts of the agility. And I've looked a little bit more, and I'm going to talk dog now, because as far as I know, the dog agility is much more developed, much more structured, I would say. What I have seen of the horse agility, there's a lot of variety in the way people do it.
Right.
It's, you know, there's not that structure, and there aren't those, you know, when I look at one agility competition for dog and another one, it seems to me that the rules are pretty similar. You know, there might be some little differences in the number of obstacles, but basically, you know, there's a dog running really fast because time matters. It's yeah. Part of what they're judged on. And they're not on a leash. They're, you know, they're doing it free. And whereas in the horse agility that I have seen, and I have not seen everything, so maybe, you know, there are things that people will have seen that I haven't, but what I have seen is it's much slower. Often people don't seem to care about the time it takes to do the course. There's a lot of agility where the horse is on a lead, is not at liberty. So it's quite different, but I think there's place for creativity in the horse agility. There's place for development And we're not competing, so we can just have fun with it. But I know that when I look at the dog agility personally, the intensity of it, I find is quite, it's exciting to look at because it's very intense.
Right.
I wouldn't want my horse to do a course with that much intensity, but sometimes when I look at some of the horse agility, for me, it's a personal opinion, I find it's not as exciting to look at because it's so slow and it's on a lead. And so I tend to be trying to borrow a little bit from the dog agility and put a little bit more excitement in what I do with my own horse. But, and this is why I had asked this question about, is there like a downside to this? So I'll explain what they mean by independent work, because they, in most experience, agility trainers I've read or looked at, they do talk about the importance of the dog to be able to take the responsibility of executing the obstacle independently of their handler. So they share responsibility. So the handler is there to help the dog navigate the course, tell the dog what is the next obstacle, but there are certain times and certain obstacles where it's important for the dog to be able to commit to the obstacle no matter where or what the handler is doing.
The dog knows how to go over an A-frame. The dog knows how to go.
Yeah, and those are good examples.
The weave poles.
The weave poles. So it may be that at the end of the weave pole, he has to do a sharp turn. And so the handler will tell him to go into the weave pole, but will not necessarily be with him all along. They will go right away to the end of the weave pole to prepare the dog and show them where to go next. So once the dog is in the weave pole, he has to commit to finish the weave pole, whatever the handler is doing. So that's his responsibility. And it's especially true when the handler doesn't go as fast as the dog, because you need to get to the other place so that you're in the right position to tell the dog what the next obstacle is. And I've experienced this with very simple things with Woody, for instance, because Woody does things much quicker than Bonanza. And I like it. You know, when I look at my videos, I like looking at Woody doing the agility, because I find it's fun. You know, it's not as slow. I can slow it down if I want to, which I feel is important, and which was one of the reasons why before I stopped doing it, because I didn't feel in control of the rhythm. But now I know how to control it more, much more. So it doesn't feel out of hand. I'm not overwhelmed by the speed. And it has nothing to do with the intensity of what we see in, like I said, in the dog agility. I wouldn't want Woody to be that excited, but I like that he's trotting when he's doing it. It's just a nice little trot and he can stop. And I put obstacles that where he has to stop. And so, but so one example was, you know, I just put a little like back bars on the ground, you know, parallel bars, just at a 90 degree angle. But, you know, even if I'm inside, he's faster than me. He will be at the end of that 90 degree angle before I am. So what I do is I cut, you know, I do a diagonal. I will go to the end of it right away, but I want him to stay inside the parallel bars and do the 90 degree turn. So this is why I think it's partly, you know, where he needs to stay with me and really be focused on me and what I'm, but there's a part where I want him to commit to the obstacle and be able to finish it, even if I'm not right next to him. Okay, so this was my question about, was there a downside to teaching the horses to work independently? And most of the agility that I have seen, for me, is really more of a healing exercise over different things, you know, because the horse is always next to the handler, and it looks to my eye more like, well, you're going to heal over tarp, over this, over that, but we're doing this healing exercise. And I find the challenge to teach the horse to work independently during certain obstacles, for me, more difficult and interesting than just the healing. But I don't, at the same time, because we're always looking, you know, at the future of things and how is this going to develop. And I don't want to create problems for myself because, you know, I had a little bit of fun with agility and now my horse is going all over the place. And so in the teaching of the dog agility that I've seen, the cues are really, they're really using cues to let the dog know, now you should be focusing on me. And at so for instance, they may change how they move, you know, they may move more faster when they want the dog to be more obstacle focused and softer when they want the dog to be handler focused, or they may.
Let's pause for a moment in this and just think, you know, we've been looking at constructional training, the whole constructional training approach. In the constructional approach, you have the four questions. What is it that you want? What are your goals? So you would start by visualizing what for you would an agility run look like. So if you were doing a really great agility obstacle course with one of your horses, what would it entail? What would it look like? What would the energy level be? What would the types of obstacles that the horses would be asked to understand? And there certainly there are obstacles where the horse, where the obstacle itself is a chain, a technical chain, where you would be saying, you know, you might be indicating the weave poles, but the weave pole is a chain in which each turn through the weave pole is a cue to start the next set of poles until you get to the end of the weave pole. And so it's you handler are not needing to continue to guide the
to micromanage it.
Right. You don't have to guide the learner, dog or horse or mouse or guinea pig or whatever it is, through the weave poles. The horse has learned this pattern and he's learned to go through various other obstacles. So there are obstacles that are technical chains, and he's learned how to maneuver through that obstacle. He doesn't need your guidance, but you would be visualizing all of that. That is not your starting point. So we cannot start a horse out and say, ah, I have just set up a line of weave poles. Horse, go through them and I will meet you at the other end. It's not going to happen. You know, you and the horse have to go through a teaching process to get to the point where you can say, here, horse, is the start of a set of weave poles. Off you go, and I'll be at the other end of them to tell you what's coming up next. So you are looking at, what is it that I want my horse to do? What's my goal? What's my dream? And I'm going to dream big. You know, I'm going to really visualize what, to me, being able to go through a fun agility course, what that would mean to me. Would I be at liberty? Would I be on a line? Would I be sitting in a chair, you know, directing it all? You know, there are lots of ways that you could do this. There's no reason why you could not be sitting in a chair and have your horse go through a whole elaborate series of obstacles. Wouldn't that be fun? That would be showing off, right?
It's pretty challenging, but
that would be very
the default is for them to stick to us.
But it would be fun to do. You look at that video that Sonia has of Winsey, where he's going around the chair, behind the chair, around the set of cones, you know, all of that. You could do that. So if that was your vision of agility, and who's to say that we can't have our own unique vision of agility? Just because everybody else is doing it that way doesn't mean that we can't say, well, we're going to just sit on the mounting block and do agility. But you can't start. But you can't start there. So you start with that goal. I mean, that would be such a fun goal to have. And then you say to yourself, all right, what do I have in repertoire already? What do I have to work with? So if I'm visualizing being able, for example, suppose I want to sit in a chair and send my horse off around a circle of cones. So he goes all the way around the circle of cones and then comes back to me as I'm sitting in my chair. What if I were going to teach that, what would I need to have in repertoire? What are some of the skills that would be handy? Do I have those skills? You know, what would I need to put in repertoire to help me get from where we currently are to where we want to be? So I would sort of do an assessment. What have I already taught? And then I would start to think about, well, how do I get from where I am now, wherever that is, and everyone's going to have a slightly different starting point, to being able to teach my horse to move off and work through a pattern on his own, and then return to me and reconnect so that we can then go off as dance partners to our next technical chain, and so that I can have both a horse who can be very connected to me and also one that can work independent of me. And then what will keep me motivated? So you take those four questions and you start looking at, well, you know, I'm not going to start with my goal. I mean, one of the things that I encounter sometimes with people who want to do agility is they're jumping in with both feet before they have taught their horses the useful skills that would make the going through obstacles so much easier. And so there are often times where the horse is being confronted with obstacles that he's not ready for, or they're going through obstacles, but the handler is not paying attention to how the horse is moving. So yeah, he's going
between two barrels, let's say.
Between two barrels, right. But as he's going around those barrels, he's leaning onto his inside shoulder. And so as he's turning, he's putting extra weight, extra strain onto his inside foreleg. And this is a horse who may already have some compromises in terms of wear and tear on his body. And so, yeah, you're doing the agility for fun, but it's not helping the horse to stay sound over the long haul. But if you included a consideration of balance, then going around those barrels could be a wonderful way of not only having fun with your horse, but also helping him to stay healthy.
This is one of the reasons, too, why I don't want it to be too speedy. You know, you read of agility dogs who have ailments. Is that the word in English?
No.
Yeah. And, you know, to their spine and you know, people question, is it because of the weaving poles? But when you see some ailments that are typical of a sport, you know that there's something there. And this is, it's emotionally, I don't want my horses to get that excited, because sometimes I feel that the, you know, the sports dogs are overexcited too. For me, I, you know, these are my companions. I'm not interested in competition personally. So I want to keep it smooth, but there's also that aspect of the body. And when things are going very fast, I know a lot of trainers are very sensitive to that and they make a lot of efforts. But, you know, when speed is involved, you can not see a lot of things that may be detrimental.
Right. So you get to visualize what to you agility means. And there is no reason why a horse cannot learn how to separate from you to complete a pattern independent of your body language cues, and mm-hmm. then come back to you and be very connected to you mm-hmm. through a different part of the dance.
So you don't see a downside to that?
I see a teaching process. To get to that point, you would go through a teaching process, and that where I see problems is when people jump in too close to the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where there are problems.
I think it will be really fun to see where the group goes with it. You know, it will be interesting because I'm sure people will send videos and right. we'll have discussion during the coaching sessions about it. And that will bring me to my next topic.
Ah, okay. Oh, Pivo.
Because I know you discussed it. And you know what happens right now when I'm doing agility? I have my phone on a tripod.
Yes.
And I need to have the whole course of obstacle inside the picture. So everything that's happening close to the camera is interesting because you can see it very well. But everything that is at the other far end is totally useless to share because it's so far, only I remember what was happening there. And even if I sent it to you, you would say to me, Dominique, it's so small. You know, I can't see what you're doing. So I've been looking at this Pivo technology that is supposed to track you with your horse. And I saw that you discussed it in the coaching session the last time. And I thought, oh my, I have to know. So I thought, you know, and I've been considering it because to share what I'm doing with the horses would be much more interesting if something could track me, because I don't have a cameraman with me when I train my horses. So what do you think?
I haven't looked at the current versions of Pivo. My Pivo is now, it's pre-COVID, so it's been a while. I know that there are a number of people who use Pivos. Michaela's one of them. And the video that I get is really useful, that it's tracking the horse, it's close enough that I can see what's going on. It's good, useful video. I have a Pivo and it works very erratically. A lot of the times it fails completely. So it's been a really frustrating tool because it's been so inconsistent. So, you know, I can't give Pivo an enthusiastic 100%, absolutely get one. It's the most amazing thing since sliced bread or whatever. I can't do that because I've been frustrated by the Pivo that I have. But mine is older. Actually, currently, the last couple times that I tried to use it, it didn't work at all. But it may be that it's because the app no longer supports it. I don't know. I haven't taken the time to investigate it. But I do see enough video which is taken by using Pivos that I would say it's a tool that is worth considering.
Okay.
So it's a
lukewarm, it's not a warm recommendation, but if maybe you have the budget for it,
right. If your budget will allow for it, I would say go for it. If you are on a really, really tight budget, then just stay with the tripod.
Okay.
Yes.
No. Okay. So I'm tempted, and because if we're going to be sending you videos of agility, they might as well be shareable.
Yes, Yes.
Yeah. I'm doing something at the other end of the arena and you can't see very well. I'm not going to send it to you.
Yeah. Having video where, you know, yeah, I think that speck down there is the horse I'm supposed to be.
Look at what I'm doing. And I know because I was there, but, you know, very hard to see.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the technology has certainly gotten better than it used to be. So it is worth considering. And it would be lovely to see some video of what you are doing with Woody and Bonanza. I would love to see.
Yeah. Well, I think if the people were to, very often I find, you know, I look at them because I'm interested. So hopefully if the people works, I can maybe start sharing some more interesting things.
That would be great.
And I'd like to, because I'm, you know, I'm hoping that we can, because I find that horse agility is, for me, is a free territory. You know, there's no set rules. And I love that it's like that. So you do whatever you want, you know. It's not like, you couldn't have that kind of attitude, I think, with dog agility. There are set rules and you have to, you know, just enter the weave ball this way, not that way. That I've included in my things, you know, that I'm trying to always come in the way that they do in the dog agility. But, you know, it doesn't really matter. Because it's so, like I said, for me anyway, unless I'm unaware that there is some really set rules.
There's nothing that says, you know, if you got a dog, there's nothing that says that you could not invent your own version of agility.
Yeah, you could, but you couldn't
have to be the competition. You know, whenever people formalize things for competition, they seem to make it to the detriment of the animals involved.
That's true.
So, you know, you could look at agility and think, you know, in theory, that should be a lot of fun for a dog, but not pushed to those extremes. So,
like, you know, I will never have neither of my horses jump.
Right.
I don't want them to jump. They're too old and, you know, they can do interesting things over poles, no problem. But I will not have them jump. Like I said, I will not have a banan trot a whole course. If he wants to trot a little bit, but I will not push for that ever. So yeah, that's true. When it's formalized, very often you have to do things you shouldn't be doing.
And people get ahead of where they are. Oh, you know, my horse has to trot because I'm entered in a competition on Saturday. So he has to trot. But he doesn't trot. I haven't taught him to trot, but let me get the whip out because he has to trot on Saturday.
Right. You know, right.
That's what happens. So, but there's no reason why you cannot invent your own version of what moving around a series of obstacles means to you. And then you look at some of the, you know, the function of the agility might be to give you some creative ideas for ways to set up obstacles and obstacles to create. But
yeah.
I would not feel the need to follow somebody else's prescription in terms of this is horse agility.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll be fun to see what different people come up with.
Yeah, because that's the other thing is people put their horses through agility patterns before they're ready for it. So they, you know, they're doing an obstacle course, but the third obstacle in, the horse is making mistakes. And it's like, it's what you were describing, learning your lines. When you stumbled over some lines, you didn't keep going over, you know, page 9, 10, and 11, stumbling over the lines on page 10. You stopped, you learned those lines that were tricky, and then you went back and did the whole sequence. Well,
exactly.
You know, I think a lot of people who are looking at agility do not understand how to teach constructionally.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they're jumping in and thinking, oh, you know, I've got a month to have my horse do this agility course. So they're practicing the whole agility course for months instead of taking it apart and working on the individual.
It's funny too, because what I like about the constructional approach, when you find a weaker part is that you don't have to rack your brain about what you're going to work on next. Because sometimes, you know, people say, oh, I don't know what to train.
Yeah.
Well, just look at your horse and you'll get great ideas, because I'm sure there are weaker parts that you could take out of the chain and work on.
Yeah.
And find all kinds of ways to teach whatever it is you need to teach. You know, like there was one obstacle I did where it was like a raised platform, and I had forgotten that Bonanza does not like to exit platform straightforward. He will dismount on the side. And I forgot this. And so it was a problem for him. Uh-huh. So I realized that right away. He was really good about it, but it was not, you know, it was not harmonious. It wasn't like I wanted it. And I remembered that I still had a whole lot of work to do with him on that. And so the next time when I did the obstacle, I did it completely different. So that backing on a mat was part of the obstacle as a game. Just as a game, you know, and he's good. He's pretty good with that. And if he's not okay, he's going to tell me, but he's willing to do what I'm asking him. So the horse will tell you where the weak link is. And it's great because it gives you lots of ideas for trainings for the next training session.
That's right. And you can always set yourself a training challenge to say, oh, I am going to sit in a chair and do my agility. And then you test the water and find out how near or far away that possibility is. Yeah. And it's, you know, it just opens up another range of things to work on. It's endless. It's always endless.
Yeah.
Thank you, as always, for listening. In these podcasts, we talk a lot about the online clinics and the coaching sessions associated with them. If you want to learn more or you'd like to register for one of these clinics, do visit my website, theclickercenter.com. And whatever interest you have in the training and whatever phase you're in, train well and have fun with your horses.